Oh, good evening. We have a new face tonight. Paul, you've been here before? No. How did you find out about us? Of course. Welcome. Let's do introductions around.
I'm Ellie. I'm Brent. You too.
I'm Lee. Samuel. Wendy.
Don.
And Angie. We've been studying a thing called the Lankavatara Sutra, which is very ancient Buddhist material, Zen, but very, very early Zen. And someone said last week, several people, why don't we talk about our own lives and how this affects it, how it has meaning for us as we go through our so-called ordinary life. Or if it does it have meaning? Or is it just too esoteric and too philosophical for us to have it have anything besides an intellectual fascination? So that's the theme tonight, is how do we take this into our life? Or do we? And if we don't, what does that mean? So, for myself, I'm always taking it into my life. The essential part of it is about selflessness and kindness, how to be with others in the world. And to me, that's the most important thing. We're so self-involved that it's very, very helpful to be reminded that that's a very limited and illusionary view. And so it's extremely helpful to me to get jiggled and joggled and tickled and reminded over and over that that isn't really this self-involvement isn't what this the reality of things is. It's a mistaken view. And it's been very helpful to me in these last couple of years, which have been stressful, to say the least. And every time I thought, oh, my hip, or my back, or my house, I would feel great pangs of anxiety and sorrow and all these things. And then I would get jiggled and joggled by something I usually sitting, and I'd think, it's not mine. It's not me. When I think my back hurts, I remind myself, it hurts. It's not my back. I don't own this. This is a process. Nobody owns it. So when it hurts, then I can feel some compassion for it and try to take care of it and not blame it for doing and being what it is, which is our egotistical tendency. You know, stupid knee hurts. Darn you. How silly. How sad. It needs all our care and attention. It does, because it is what it is. It is what we're looking for. So I'm very interested in your view, how it is to read this material, especially. It was something that I was remembering. I thought I wrote it down. I sort of rewrote it. Self-importance of this package of skandhas, I think of as myself. The package that I think of as myself arises from the interplay of connection. Thus, my ordinary difficulties, my larger, don't come from me. Crises don't come from me, don't belong to me, and can't be blamed on anyone. When we do that, we're projecting. That's the term they use in here, that we take from our experience and project it onto an imaginary something. It can be you, it can be me. But the truth is, there's only a we in which we each individually participate. So I'm done.
All sorts of problems in my life. I don't want all my neighbors' problems. And keep bumping into them, you know, when I extend compassion and get more than I bargained for. And then now, right now in my life, I feel like I'm just juggling all these commitments and responsibilities and trying to focus on one thing at a time, but it's a challenge. And I don't know how I got in this place. It was not intentional. So how do responsibilities, individual responsibilities, fit into this picture? Are so boundaries and boundaries in our relations with other people?
That's a very important question. And when we talk about compassion practice and wisdom practice, if they're not balanced, then we get overworked, you could say, that you only do what you can, not what you think you can. And if you can't, you can be upfront about it and say, I can't. I'm sorry, I can't. It's hard to do, especially for women. We're supposed to be able to do all of it and not complain. But I think it's very important to be able to say, I'm sorry, I've reached my limit, I can't do this. And if people don't appreciate that and understand, well, maybe they can take care of themselves better. You have to.
Well, it's not a matter of people coming up and saying, could you do this, this, and this? I just see one need and try to meet, to submit suggestions, help, whatever, connect. And then I see, oh, there's a bigger need. There's a bigger need. And then when they don't follow through, I have to step back, you know. But.
Yeah.
I guess I want to manage other people's problems instead of
your own. Well, that might be the crux of it, huh?
I see it, but I live in an apartment building. They're all seniors, and a lot of them have disabilities, limited incomes, and it makes me feel very fortunate. Feel like I need to offer them something.
Well, that's the Bodhisattva way. It's like filling a well with snow. That's the image. But you do have to take care of yourself, or you can't help others.
Well, I do.
Well, there you are. You live an ideal life. It's perfect. How fortunate, how joyful.
Yes. I mean, there's times when I like feel guilty for going to the store by myself.
Oh.
Or going to farmer's market. To go through this process of why I'm doing that. So, yeah. Thank you.
Samia.
The hospital says that I really don't get what you said. I feel lost, and I was wondering if somebody else gets it and can reword it. Maybe I can get it then, or maybe you could say it again, or maybe we could do it another time. As far as the pain is not ours. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And from the point of view of your own individual life, of course, it hurts. But you are not only an individual life, and if you partake of the wholeness of the whole picture, you don't have to concentrate on what's happening to you as something personal, because it's not, and as something that is aimed at you, or that it's just something that's happening, and adding a judgment to it, calling it mine, calling it a bad thing, wishing it to go away, is all extra.
Especially if you've caused it, like you didn't look to the right, you stepped in and a car ran over your foot. Therefore, the foot is broken, therefore it hurts, therefore many other problems.
It hurt a lot, too.
I did not look before I crossed, you know, so there is a I'm not trying to make myself feel guilty, but it's awareness. You know, we sit here, we're talking about paying attention. So, an accident happens, okay, I forgive myself for not paying attention, but there's the consequences, the pain, the cast,
yeah.
I can't do this, I can't do that.
But you don't know what made it happen in the first place.
It's not paying attention.
No, that's not all of it. That's just one little tiny piece of jillions and jillions. That's what the next chapter is all about causes and conditions, how it comes to happen something. If you think it's just you and the car that ran over your foot, then you're leaving out everything that led up to that moment. Everything. That you were there in the first place, that you were there at that moment in that place, that you came there, flew across the ocean to be there, that you got born by certain parents, and they had you in a certain way, in a certain place. I mean, it goes all the way back to Adam and Eve. It goes back to the amoebas. So you can't take it personally, really. You can say,
so,
happening.
So we did that, and we're okay with that. Now you've got to deal with the...
With the consequences, yeah.
So the foot is broken. The foot is broken. I'm not broken?
No, you're not broken. Unless you take it on to be broken. That's extra. That's another step.
In the not-so-healthy direction...
Well, it gives more pain.
So, you go to the doctor, you put a cast on it, you do feel the pain, but you don't give it too much credit?
Yeah.
So you let it be broken.
Yes.
And you kind of defer your thoughts to... Flower?
No. No, you don't. You don't look away. You don't look away.
You keep looking at it, and you tell it it's not. I'm not getting it.
And you look at it, and you can feel pity for it. You can encourage it. You know, poor thing, the poor foot.
So you treat it like another person, like you're feeling sorry for another. Person that something bad happened?
You could say so, yes.
And that's not taken away from my responsibility of being present.
Yes, yeah. There was the, of course you were.
So you're doing both at the same time.
Yes.
It's a lot of work.
Actually, it's
once you see it, you see it.
If you see it, it doesn't hurt as much. Believe it or not. If you allow it, Wendy is not agreeing.
The same thing with everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great inconvenience.
Oh, yes.
How do you deal with that?
The way you always deal with inconvenience. Grumble. Complain. Kick a few tires.
Well, I mean... Like, so you aren't able to fulfill obligations.
So you don't fulfill them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're always adjusting our life and changing it as things happen. And we're always, our tendency is to try to keep everything the same. And then we get... very nervous and unhappy because they never are the same. And there's always something coming up. And if we don't accept it and allow it, then we suffer.
Well, how do you build in that flexibility into your life? Do you like to say, no, I can't do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Saying no is really important. You know, I think we, especially in our practice, are trying to be so nice that we say maybe yes too often. I've found that in my life. Oh, sure, I'll drive 25 miles to do such and such, and then find it's way too much. So it takes some insight. And the best way to know is practice, is Zazen. Because in Zazen, there's no way to look at a flower to distract ourselves in any way. We just have to sit and face whatever there is to face. And just be there with it. Or be it. The whole itness of it. And that, in fact, is liberating. You don't have to take so much responsibility. Marie?
So, I like the sutra, and I like the thinking about consciousness and how they break up consciousness with the skandhas and the dhatus and the dependent co-arising and so on. And I sort of get the fact that there's a co-construction of reality. And we talked last week about the sutra in some sense feels very individual. It feels very much about mind only, where mind is just in here. But I think it's really this co-construction and you're influenced by other people, which is kind of what you were saying. But the part that I think that will take me a while to figure out is where free will, what we call free will or what we perceive as free will or intention, how that fits into that big picture of the sutra. That part just, you know, doesn't fit for me where that fits in, where intention fits in.
Well, it's in that layered description of the mind, the mind of as the five skandhas, as form, feeling, perception, impulses, consciousness, and then the next one is eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, of the reaction of the body and mind, and then there's the manas, which is the sort of, what did Koban call manas? Office boy. Somebody who's always running errands and deciding what needs to be done and running back and forth. That's where that and the next stage are the willing and determining and judging that's going on. And then there's the store consciousness in which all our memories reside. And all the things that came before us reside, in which we are always getting affected by and enacting ourselves from. It's like a great big barn where everything is sort of in there. And it's kind of a big problem for us because it's so dark and so hard to know what's going on in there. And with practice, the other ones, it's a kind of quieting down. So Zazen, as we know, starts out with a great stirring of, you could say that everything going on and all the memories going on and the movies and the novels and the tragedies and the... And then... As we quiet down, we begin to see how it operates and to see how unreal it is or how maybe not unreal, that's the wrong word, but to see how we're not seeing it clearly. And with clarity, with real clarity, and with real acceptance, the way Coben says it is that all of that barn full of everything of us is suffused with light.
So, is it enough to see kind of what's in the barn in order to be able to act differently in the same, you know, two situations, right? Exact same external causes, but here's one storehouse consciousness, here's another storehouse consciousness. You'll act different based on the contents of the storehouse consciousness, as opposed to just kind of seeing what's in the storehouse, being aware of what's in the storehouse consciousness. In other words, are you uploading
yes.
things and sort of saying, oh, you know?
Well, that's part of the process. Mm-hmm. No, as Thich Nhat Hanh describes it. Seeds, he calls, you know, there are many seeds, and some of them are bad seeds, and so you don't encourage them to grow, and others are, so that's a sort of hokey way of thinking about it, but it's relevant to the process of it. So the whole thing is a process, and we don't throw away the five skandhas. We don't deny our eyes, ears, nose, tongue. All of this is vital and is our life, is the life, the life of Buddha. So it's just that we perceive what's called the, I call it the world of hard edges, the world that we call our ordinary life as just ordinary, and we're always looking for something more or better. And what the change is when we're able to see that this very life as it is, this moment, is Buddha's life, is light itself. And that was Buddha's understanding under the tree. That all the things that his mind was throwing up over and over, and he kept looking at his fears and his ambitions and his lusts and greeds and all of that, he began to see that it was all just stuff. And the reality was he was just sitting under the tree. Chew on it. How can we like ourselves? How can we like our life? Someone else?
Say that last time you, I think near the end of last talk, you mentioned the rose, and you said something like, we think we know the rose, we think we know what a rose is or something,
mm-hmm.
but we really don't.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any idea really what all goes into a rose.
Yes.
And that really stuck with me this week. I thought about that often. Mm-hmm. And it really was such a beautiful, I guess, kind of a koan, really, that you threw out. And I think it applies to what we're talking about tonight, too, that we really don't know. I mean, it's kind of that don't know. I started, then I make it into a cliche. It's the don't know mind. But it is even an injury or a plant or anything. It's just so, it's so much more than the kind of cartoon image that we might have of it or the words that we might use to describe it if we really kind of take it in.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like the William James story. I think I've told it here, where he wanted to study psychology with, or maybe it was science anyway, at Harvard back in the 1800s. He went to the famous scientist there who said, I don't know whether I want to take you in or not. He said, I'll test you. And so he put him in a room with a fish in a jar, a preserved fish. And he said, I want you to study this fish. Take it out and look at it and tell me at the end of the day everything you've discovered about this fish. And so William James really worked hard, and he looked and looked, and he wrote and wrote, and then at the end of the very long day, he presented the paper to the professor, and the professor looked at it, and he said, that's good work. Come back tomorrow. And every day, for a week, it was like that. And at the end of the week, the professor said, you've done a very good job, and I accept you in my program, but I hope by now you understand there is no end to the fish. However long we look. And it's true of ourself, too. We think we know ourself, but really, we don't. And if we're willing, we can be endlessly surprised. It's always such an amazing thing. Ah, it's like this? Well, it's time. I don't know whether I said so before or not, because I made this date many, many, many months ago. But I'm going to be gone next week. And I didn't realize it until I turned the calendar page and saw that I'm supposed to be away for 5 days. So I apologize. I thought I was back forever and would never go away again, but just this one time I have to go. I already committed to it. So I hope that's not a blow. But I trust you all can take care of it, because you have before so beautifully. And that's enough to say. But I'll be back. I will certainly be back, and be back for long, long, long.